I'm really happy to see you here. Great to have you here. You are both working at NOIB, the Max Schrems and Christoph Scholl idea of having an NGO to enforce GDPR and digital rights. So I think you will talk about how it is working there and what you did by now. The thing is about 1 year old, I think, right?
Yes, almost. Officially came into action in May 2018 on the first day of the GDPR with the first four complaints that were filed then.
Okay, so I'm really curious about what you're going to tell us. Big applause for Yannis and Gaëtan.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. First of all, we would like to start by expressing our sincere thanks to the organizers for facilitating this event. And another year of Privacy Week, another great job, guys. And especially our sincere thanks to a former colleague of ours at NOIB, Claudia, also known as Jinx. Many thanks, Claudia. So, we are both data protection lawyers at NOIB. NOIB stands for None of Your Business. It's the European Center for Digital Rights, co-founded by privacy activist Maximilian Schrems. Now, you will tell me that we probably have already too many NGOs dealing with privacy stuff. Why do we need one more? Actually, most NGOs that currently exist deal with the issue of enforcement from a state perspective. They try to challenge surveillance measures or bring claims against the state. The difference, an innovation of NOIB, lies in the fact that we focus on commercial privacy violations. We focus mainly on GDPR strategic litigation. We want to bring cases that will have an EU-wide impact on enforcing our rights to privacy. You will have the opportunity, of course, to find out more about NOIB's concept and strategy in Max's talk, which will follow shortly after. For now, what we will focus on today with our presentation is to give you a brief overview of the first four complaints that we filed on the 25th of May 2018, the first day of the GDPR, on the issue of forced consent. We filed these complaints against four companies: Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, and Google. In the following slides, we will present the key legal issues of the complaints and update you on their procedural aspects.
So, what if we told you that in order to attend this presentation, you would have to provide us with your first and last names, your mailing address, your postal address, your political beliefs, your religious beliefs, a list of all your friends?
I think that's enough.
Is it? Because I would also like to know your friends' email addresses, your friends' postal addresses. Okay, I think you got it.
Nowadays, the collection, analysis, and commercial exploitation of personal data lies at the heart of the digital economy. Our personal data is becoming even more precious than ever, and that's the reason they ought to be protected. According to the General Data Protection Regulation, we should be able to decide for ourselves whether and to whom we allow the use of such data. However, the prevailing practice of large companies seems to be quite different.
GDPR contains some key developments for data protection, including some extremely harsh sanctions for those not wishing to comply. Do you remember this spring, I believe it was around the 20th of May, did you receive hundreds of emails from companies kindly informing you that they had made some updates from their privacy policies? Maybe you also noticed that some of these companies forced you to consent. You had to agree, you had no other choice. The day of the GDPR was the perfect opportunity for us at NOIB to start with our actions. We gathered up as a team and we started drafting the complaints about, I'd say, 4 or 5 days before the D-Day. Our four complaints focus on the issue of forced consent. But mentioning forced consent, let's jump back a little bit to what is consent itself. The GDPR provides for 6 different legal bases to process personal data. Consent is one of them, and it lies at the core of the regulation. Basically, consent means that you should have control over the future of your personal data. Let's try to understand this definition by getting rid of the legalese. In short, in order to be considered valid, consent needs to be free, it must be specific, it must be unambiguous, and it must be informed. Focusing on the voluntariness of consent is considered free when it can be withdrawn at any time. It must be as easy to give consent as it is to withdraw it. The data subject, you, must benefit from a real freedom to choose. A few days before May 25th, 2018, the day of the GDPR, we realized that Facebook, WhatsApp, Instagram, and Google were using questionable methods to obtain their users' consent. We see this consent as being forced.
Let's now jump in the elements of forced consent for a second. Forced consent can be broken down to four particular elements. Imbalance of power, that is, when the provider of a service, let's say the controller, possesses a dominant position in the market, which somehow puts you under pressure to agree or give your consent without really thinking about it a second time. The second element is conditionality. Conditionality is when users are offered a choice, but this choice is not genuine because it's offered as a condition to use the service. The third one is the lack of granularity, when the controller or the provider of the service seeks to obtain with one single action of consent, consent for many different processing operations. And the final element is the detriment effect. The detriment effect is somehow putting you in a disadvantageous, let's say, position when you try to decline your consent. It somehow downgrades the service for you, pressuring you, on the other hand, to give consent right away. We used all of these four specific elements in the four complaints we filed against these four companies, but for matters of time now, we will just go through each one of them by having an example of each of the four complaints, therefore an example of each of the four companies. And starting with the first one, the imbalance of power, this element helps us determine whether the controller possesses a dominant position against the data subjects, also known as the users. The GDPR does not exactly define the imbalance of power in a context of, let's say, commercial transactions. We get a clearer picture, however, if we think about services that play a dominant role in our daily lives. Unfortunately, Facebook seems to be one of those services, and if we look at this statistic, we quite see the dominant position Facebook has in the social media landscape. What's also interesting if we notice this statistic is if we take the top five social media applications, the four of them are owned by Facebook. This also increases what we call the network effect. Just because of the fact that most of our social acquaintances, family members, friends, people we know are on such social media, especially Facebook, put some extra pressure for us to sign up or to agree to the updated terms of policy without actually thinking about it a second time. Moving on to the second element of a forced consent, conditionality, what's important to underline here is that the GDPR explicitly prohibits data controllers, the providers of a service, to ask for extra, additional information that is not necessary in order to fulfill a service's terms. In other words, what data controllers most of the time seek to do is ask for extra uses of your data so as to use it for other purposes, let's say advertisement, but with just one single act of consent. The example we have here is WhatsApp. This is the WhatsApp terms of service, but I will first refer to the WhatsApp privacy policy. The WhatsApp privacy policy requires users to give consent to processing operations that are necessary to fulfill the WhatsApp terms of service. These processing operations are not defined in the privacy policy of WhatsApp. If one takes a closer look at the WhatsApp terms of service, however, we see that these processing operations actually mean sharing personal data with Facebook companies and affiliates or for advertising purposes. And the question that arises, therefore, is how is it exactly necessary to give WhatsApp my personal data or my list of friends' personal data just to use a messenger application? Let's now move to the third element, which is the lack of granularity, what we also call all or nothing. GDPR explicitly states that in order to obtain consent, you need to use a single act of consent for every processing operation that you have. Therefore, what controllers, providers of service, most of the times try to do is bundle up all these processing operations and seek one-time consent that will cover everything. I think this example was quite legalese, so I have a more practical one. with Instagram. In the case of Instagram, which was among the pop-ups that were shown to users, there was just a pop-up saying, hi, we have updated our terms of policy and privacy policy as well, and we would like you to consent. You would either have to take it or leave it as it is. You could not choose or cherry pick certain or specific operations of processing that you would like to agree to or decline. And if you didn't want to use the service, you just had to delete or be blocked from your account. Finally, it's the detriment effect as another crucial element to determine whether consent was freely given. The detriment effect means that users, we, should not be put in an onerous position by declining to accept. This, of course, is understood most of the times as coercion, deceit, or threats, but there are more simple examples as that. For example, the Android service. The Android operating system had its privacy terms and policy updated and required users to immediately consent before being able to use the service. In fact, if one bought a phone on the night of the 25th of May 2018, they would not be able to use their phone at all, not even for emergency calls, unless they first agreed to the updated terms of the Android operating system.
So, now that you've seen in practice why we chose to go against these four companies, let us take a look at the procedural side. The GDPR, General Data Protection Regulation, as we all know, brought two major innovations of which we were able at NOIB to fully benefit from. First of all, let me tell you about Article 80. Among other things, Article 80 allows data subjects to mandate an NGO to lodge a complaint on their behalf with a supervisory authority. Here in Austria, in Vienna, that's the Datenschutzbehörde. Sorry about my accent. In order to do so, the NGO must fulfill several requirements, and it must be active in the protection of digital rights. Until today, all the complaints that we've been bringing as NOIB were deemed admissible. This means that NOIB, as an NGO, fulfills all the criteria of Article 80, which is very good news. The other great innovation that the GDPR brought is the power of data subjects to act locally under the cross-border cooperation mechanism. Before GDPR, data subjects had to lodge their complaints with the DPA of the country, where the controller, the provider of the service, had its main establishment. Now you can go to your national data protection authority, that we call DPAs, for example, as I mentioned, the Datenschutzbehörde. So let's take an example. You're here in Vienna, and you have an issue with a company that is headquartered in Germany. You can now file your complaint directly with the Datenschutzbehörde, and the Datenschutzbehörde will cooperate with the Data Protection Authority of Germany, which will be called the Lead Supervisory Authority. What is going to happen is that the German DPA will still be active, but it will have to collaborate somehow with the Austrian DPA. So let's see how it works in practice, shall we? So the complaint against WhatsApp was filed in Hamburg with the Schleswig-Holstein Data Protection Authority. The complaint against Instagram was filed here in Brussels with the Belgian DPA. The complaint against Facebook was filed in Vienna, here in Austria. And the complaint against Google was filed in Paris with the CNIL. What we observed with these complaints is that the cooperation mechanism between the supervisory authorities was triggered for the very first time. For the WhatsApp complaint, first the Hamburg DPA received the complaint and it forwarded it to the German federal DPA. Then the federal German DPA sent it to Ireland. Why? Because, as you probably know, this is where WhatsApp has its own European headquarters, and so it was considered being their main establishment. So the Irish DPA in this case became the lead supervisory authority. And exactly the same thing happened in two cases. The first one being Instagram, so as I told you, we filed in Brussels, and the Belgian DPA sent the complaint all the way to Dublin as well, Dublin acting as a lead supervisory authority in cooperation with the Belgian DPA. And again, with the Facebook complaint here in Vienna, Facebook has its main establishment in Ireland, in Europe, and so it's exactly the same scenario. The only complaint that will be dealt solely by the DPA where we filed is the CNIL one, Google. It's quite interesting, actually, because the CNIL informed us about 2 weeks ago that Google did not have a main establishment in the EU, but they simply listed an address somewhere in California, Mountain View, I believe. And because of this, the CNIL will be handling the complaint on its own. What's quite interesting here, though, with WhatsApp, Facebook, and Instagram, is that we'll be able to observe how exactly the different supervisory authorities will work together. The question that matters for now is what will happen if the different DPAs disagree on certain points, and why this can still be a good thing for us.
So, as Gaetan demonstrated, in our three of the four cases, the ones dealing with Instagram, Facebook, and WhatsApp, two supervisory authorities will be implicated, with the lead supervisory authority being the one in Ireland. In that case, the Irish supervisory authority will have to adopt a draft decision. This draft decision will then be communicated to the relevant national supervisory authority. For example, for Facebook, it will be communicated to the Datenschutzbehörde here in Vienna. For Instagram, it will be communicated to the Belgian one, and for WhatsApp, to the German federal one. If, let's say, that the relevant national data protection authority does not raise a relevant objection to the draft decision adopted by Ireland, then this signals agreement, and it means that we have a decision. This final decision will then be adopted by the Irish data protection authority in case our complaint is upheld. This means that that Ireland will be adopting the final decision if a violation of the GDPR is found. If our complaints are dismissed or rejected, then the decision, the final one, will be adopted by the relevant national data protection authority. What's more interesting in this case is what will happen in case these actors disagree with each other. The scenario starts with the same thing, the Irish data protection authority adopting the draft decision, but then the relevant national data protection authority, either one of them, raising an objection to the decision, to the draft decision adopted by Ireland. Then, in that case, the consistency mechanism under the General Data Protection Regulation is triggered. This means that the European Data Protection Board, or EDPB, is engaged. The European Data Protection Board is a European independent organ which comprises of representatives of the relevant national data protection authorities across the whole of the EU. In that case, it will be the EDPB that will have its jurisdiction triggered and will be the one who will take over the case and decide. Its decision will then have to be implemented by the relevant national data protection authorities concerned, and its jurisdiction will be binding on the relevant national data protection authorities. What's also more interesting and should be noted in this case is that the decision of EDPB on the case cannot be challenged before domestic courts. This means that the decision of the EDPB cannot be brought before proceedings before national courts. It can only be challenged before the European Court of Justice. And in that case, it's the data protection, the data controller, one of these three companies in this case, or the data subject, complainant, or in that case us, that can bring a decision right away, what we call an action for annulment. We see this as very important, and as Max will explain in his presentation right after us, it seems that in a post-GDPR data protection field, all roads lead to Luxembourg for a straightaway, coherent, and consistent interpretation of data protection rules.
So let's summarize what we just discussed. We talked about the first four complaints that NOIB brought on the 25th of May and how we were able to do so as an NGO. We first explained why we based these complaints on forced consent. Then we described how the new cross-border cooperation mechanism was triggered. Of course, the intervention of all these different actors takes quite some time, let's be honest. At this point, we do not have any tangible result of the complaints. But it's crucial to pay attention to what the outcomes will be. We believe that these complaints might have significant impact on our rights as data subjects.
And of course, one of the basic innovations of the GDPR is the extreme and harsh sanctions it brings for those not wishing to comply. And if our complaints are upheld, these four companies will be confronted with some extreme fines that will likely serve also as an example for those wishing to use such deceitful methods in order to obtain forced consent from other data subjects, or us. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much. I come up to you because of people in the stream. Are there questions in the audience? Yes.
Thank you very much for the interesting talk. As far as understood, I should have some complaints too. So would you recommend me to file some complaints also? Or do you have some text examples I can use to file some complaints against Facebook, WhatsApp, Instagram?
Yes, thank you very much for your question. Our complaints, by the time they were filed, they were made available online immediately. So if you go through our website, the NOIB website, you will find the models of these complaints, and you can feel free to use these as templates. And of course, if your complaints relate to the issue of forced consent, feel free to peruse the elements contained therein.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Further questions? Yes.
Thank you very much. When Max Schrems announced on the Financial Times a few weeks before the entry into force of the GDPR that indeed he would file right away some complaints, we in the privacy community started a form book, you know, bets, what will it be? And when we discovered that he tackled the consent issue, there was a major gasp of surprise. And basically, we said, of all the things in the world, he would go after consent. Now, Max Schrems obviously has a leadership role in the privacy movement. So why consent? Obviously, we listened to your argument, and it's ex parte. Privacy practitioners know that actually it is a little bit more complicated, as you know very well, because you predicate the whole thing. I was surprised that you wouldn't quote Article 29 Working Party opinion, which is much stronger in support of your case. However, as you know, the crucial point is whether free services that suck up data do fall under these provisions. This is a vexed question. So my question to you is, consent as it is has been hotly debated in the privacy studies community as an efficient avenue of attack against these big data aggregators, unless there is something, and maybe Max Schrems can answer this later on, unless what you're really aiming at is a ban on third-party tracking. Because if you profile consent in a way, and you win this case, the one effect that it will have, it will make third-party tracking much, much more difficult. This is in line with the Article 29 Working Party comments on the e-privacy regulation, the draft comments on the e-privacy regulation. So that's my point to you. Is there a hidden agenda here? I know if it's hidden, you should not disclose it, but please do.
Rephrasing your question, and thank you very much for it. It helps us shed light on more particular issues. I think it relates strongly to a couple of questions we also received from media around the days that we filed. Whether by targeting consent, what we really wanted to do is throw out all kind of advertisement or third-party tracking. What we really focus on here, however, is consent as a legal basis enshrined in Article 6 of the GDPR. And what many people ignore is that it's not the only one as a legal basis. Of course, there is another legal basis, a very useful one, called necessary to fulfill the terms of a contract. And in a utopic reality where no even monopolies exist, or in a utopic reality where GDPR is abided by most of the companies or all of them, consent should be much more minimized. Actually, we should not be asked for consent just for services we use, because if they retain to the strict requirements of the use of data, consent is not required for these services to use them. I cannot really comment on the secret agenda thing, but from a NOIP perspective and strategy, I'm sure that Max will be happy to discuss this further with you. But one more point on the issue of consent. We perused vastly the guidelines by the Article 29 Working Party and have also incorporated them greatly to the complaints that we filed. And it was also a motivation for us, the strong position taken by the Working Party in order to file these complaints, because in our mind, the tactics these basic four companies used, not only them but also others, but the tactics this company used were such an extreme violation of the GDPR that we thought we should act on this issue as our first strategy. Thank you.
Yes, one of
them. Yeah. Is it her?
The red one, red hand microphone, please.
Hello? No.
Technical team? The technical team?
Oh, yeah, now it's.
Yeah.
Okay. I have just a question about understanding. You presented your case about four companies, and you said Google was in France, mm-hmm. and you presented how the procedure was for the other cases. But for the France one, I'm not sure if the local or the France decision is the final decision, or if we do, if there's a way that it will go to the European level as well.
Okay, thank you very much for your question. What happens basically with Google is that, as you know, there are Google offices all around Europe, but when we had a look at the Google privacy policy, we found out that the only address they listed was in California. So that's the reason why the CNIL on its own will handle the complaint. Of course, there are several complaints against Google being filed all over Europe, so the CNIL is working actively with its counterparts and other DPAs across the EU. But the EDPB might not intervene in this case, as the CNIL has everything it needs to rule on the issue.
I think I saw some more hands before. Ah, yeah.
Only a very quick question. You mentioned it will take some time. So if we have to go all the way through to the end, how much time will have passed until we have a final ruling?
So that's a very good question, actually. We believe that the GDPR will actually reduce the time that was needed before, so that's the good news. Unfortunately, since it's brand new and it's just being implemented, we need to see, and that's also one of the reasons why we filed in different countries. It's in order to see who's going to be the most reactive here and, you know, who's going to be the most willing to be consumer-friendly and enforce the privacy rights that are enshrined in the GDPR.
More questions? Could you please repeat it with a microphone for the people in the stream?
Thank you. Which of the DPAs is so far?
Can we comment on this?
all of them. And none of them. Actually, they are pretty eager to engage in the new provisions and mechanisms enshrined in the GDPR, but they all seem to be figuring their way out in order to enforce the provisions effectively. This is something not pretty much new, not only for us, but also for the DPAs who have to cooperate with each other and also organize in a way to provide effective remedies.
More questions in the audience? Have there been questions in that internet? No. Okay. So, thank you very much for your talk.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
I think it will be very interesting what will happen in the next, like, 2 years or so. So, well, that takes just a really long time. So we're really hoping for having you here maybe next year again to talk about whatever happened by then.
We'd love
Thanks.
To be here. Thank you.
Big
Thank
applause,
you.
Please.
Thank you.